So do you still sing, Troy?
Wait, please tell me you did not find that Pirate King
Yes,
video.
I did.
Fuck, I told my parents to take that down.
I was about to announce to everybody that they should, in fact, go search Troy Farkas, God. The Pirate King.
Yeah, that was so terrible. And that wasn't like my part. That was an octave above what I actually sang at.
I fucking died watching that.
Is this an appropriate distance from my mouth?
It is. You can even lower it and angle it higher, so that way we can see your beautiful face. Thank you.
Yes. You gotta accentuate the eyes here.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, Nim and Sinéad did comment on your lips.
Really?
Yes.
When?
When we all went to lunch. We were talking about how pretty you are.
Oh, I love that.
Those are
my favorite people. I love those people.
Isn't she great? I love her.
Sinéad, she is a doll.
I love her so much. She's awesome. And what she does is so cool, like with her health and stuff. It's just like, she's great.
Yeah.
She's great. So I guess now you would have... Wait, are they in London? No.
Yeah, they live in London.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Have we started or no?
Yeah, we started.
Oh, okay.
I do the intro after.
Oh, gotcha.
I feel like it's weird to do an intro with the guest around. Like, because... You know, you don't know, like, I don't know, I like to do it without them, and also what if you fuck up, and what if you say, like, you know, they're a Spotify employee when they're really a Ringer employee.
Right. Yeah, I actually, so when I do my podcast, I tend to do the intro with the guest there. Now, I might cut it out in post if I didn't like it, but I always do it there, because I usually think very highly of the people that come on my show. So I just end up praising them a bunch and just hype them up and get them ready to talk about themselves, because people love talking about themselves. So I usually do the intro.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So my old podcast, Saniac Podcast, we would do that, but then there would be sometimes where we would like get on the Zoom, because it was all by Zoom and it was live. And the first 5 minutes would be amazing before I'd done the intro.
Right.
And then I have to like stop and do the intro. And then it sort of resets the mood in kind of a weird way and it ruins the flow. So it's like I'm stuck between a bit of a rock and a hard place with that decision. But
gotcha. Yeah,
I like just jumping in. All right, Troy Farkas, TST, LST. Do you like how I put all the nicknames there?
I love that. I love that. And I love how you are sticking to the LST gimmick, because I don't think many other people are, but you are a day one and you remember me making the plea to become LST, because for those of you who don't know, Ariel Helwani coined the nickname TST for me when I was at ESPN. It stands for Tight Ship Troy, because I was very corporate. I was very, I'm going to do what my bosses tell me. This is when I was 22, 23 years old. I really didn't know much. I didn't know any better. So I was just like, I'm doing what they're telling me. They're telling me these hard and fast rules, which is kind of the ESPN way. And so I would just impose those on Ariel too. So he called me Tight Ship Troy. I was very by the book, black or white. Now, in my later years, at age 26, in my independent Troy years.
Soon retirement.
Yeah, exactly. I've loosened the reins. I have done a lot of research into the podcast industry, and there's so many different ways. There's no right way to do this. I used to think that there was a right and a wrong way to do this. There's no playbook. You can make it up as you go. There's so many different formats to experiment with, so many different things that work that you wouldn't think work when you first pitched that as an idea, but then it ends up working.
You can do whatever you want.
There's no rules.
No
RSS.
Rules.
That's the beauty of it.
Yes. Ugh, I love a good RSS feed.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys, before we continue with this episode, I'm going to give us a little message from our sponsor, the people who keep the lights on. Choo-choo, sort of. Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season and every season. Next season, last season, if you can get a time machine, you should also use Bet Online. Basically, all of the seasons, you should use Bet Online. BetOnline.ag. You can check out all of their different sports betting things, like betting on golf or betting on more golf, or perhaps you want to bet on some more golf. You know, listen, no matter how much golf you want to bet online for, BetOnline is there for you. BetOnline.ag. Use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to get 50% off your welcome bonus. That's right. Just as I believe in you to bet successfully on golf, why don't you believe in me to use this promo code? BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. That got creative. Back to you in the studio, Sean. So what were some examples? Give us like an example of something that you would hold them to. Like, was it like starting on time, that kind of stuff?
So the data that my bosses at ESPN would show me, we focus very much on the completion rate of a podcast, which means, okay, of the at X amount of listeners that listen to this, how many of them finished the entire episode. So the completion rate was the big thing that we focused on. And so a good completion rate was 75% and up. Mm. And we would consistently be getting on Ariel Helwani's Wednesday show 65%. And so we were like, okay, how can we get that up to a 75? Now, the show was going 90 minutes. All right. If we want people to listen to the entire episode, let's shorten the show. Mm. So I proposed to Ariel, hey, I think we should make the show 60 minutes. Let's aim for 55 to 60 minutes, see if we can get that completion rate up. So we started doing that, and then he did an episode of 60 minutes, hated it, but did it just to appease me, and then on the next episode just was like, I'm not doing it. Because this is a guy who made a career off of doing five-hour shows before he got to ESPN. To restrict him to 60 minutes was an absolutely insane idea to him at the time. And so, I understand the frustration when I brought it up, but like that was an example of a thing that, again, like, it doesn't really matter what your completion rate is.
Yeah, it really doesn't fucking matter. Like, at the end of the day, just none of that stuff kind of matters. I'm a big believer of podcasting should be fun because it's a medium where you're creating. So if you're not actually enjoying it, then why are you doing it? You know, it really should be something that's enjoyable, which is why, like, you know, I mean, listen, my mod episode was like 2 hours and 50 something minutes or like close to 3.5, whatever it was. But like, I don't care who listened to the whole thing. Some people did. I personally think the last half hour was the best half hour.
Yeah.
And that ends up happening. But that's the problem is like, if you limit yourself, if you try and do everything in like a tight, you know, tight ship hour, if you will, then it's hard to get some of that gold that you get at the end.
Right. And it stops being a labor of love at that point. You're really in your head, you're stopped, because to do a podcast well, it needs to be something that you feel inspired by, that you are just so passionate about, and that will, because I mean, as you know, there's so much to putting out a podcast that's more than just this conversation. A lot of people think this is why so many podcasts start and then fail, or people stop doing it, because it's so much more work than you think. It is more than just getting a mic, turning it on, and recording a conversation with your best friends. A number of people who have approached me and said, hey, I want to start a podcast. My friends and I are hysterical together. Just get some mics. We can do it over Zoom, and it'll be great, and we'll become famous, right? No, that's not how it works, honey.
The amount of people that have come up to me since, it's funny because when you start podcasting, because it's one of those kind of elusive mediums now where it's really fresh. Like, there's not that many podcast producers that are roaming around. There's a lot of TV or radio producers that have moved into podcasting and sort of done that because they have to pivot. But there's not a lot of people who start off in podcasting and like that's their thing.
Yeah.
So when you are a podcast producer, you do get hounded. Everyone's like, oh, I want to start a podcast. I want to do this.
Yeah.
The amount of shows I've helped create that have not gone anywhere because the hosts are like, oh, actually, like, I don't think I can sustain this. And I'm like, you think?
When it's, happens. I read a lot of data about the industry. I'm obsessed about the podcast industry. And this was a couple weeks ago, and I'm sure the data's changed. But at the time, a month ago, let's say 5.2 million podcasts were available on Spotify, but only 3% of them had put out an episode in the last 10 days.
Damn.
There are so many podcasts out there. And this is why people talk so much about market saturation. Oh, I don't want to start a podcast. There's so many out there. How am I going to be different? Yes, there are a lot out there, but there's not that many that are that active.
Mm.
And to be considered in the top 5% of podcasts in terms of numbers-wise, it's only like 20,000 downloads or something to be considered in the elite of the elite of podcasting.
Right. People would be so surprised at the numbers. There's like a lot of times if I've consulted with people who have like smaller shows, they're really concerned because their shows only get like, let's say 300 or 400 downloads. And I tell them, I'm like, for a real estate podcast that's super niche and just based in LA, that's pretty fucking
good. It's actually very good. Yeah.
I'm like, there's majority of shows will never hit over that 200 line, which is really crazy when you're, so a lot of people get discouraged by that, but they don't realize like that it's, you know, I'm a big believer of regardless of how saturated the market is, go for it because it's just a medium. It's not like you're selling pants in a world of a bunch of pants, but what if you made the best pants? Go fucking sell your pants. Mm-hmm. You know, we could all, I still need new pants. Some of mine are horrible. What if you come up with like a new genius design, you know, a new genius podcast? What if you bring something to the table? People eventually will gravitate to it. So what, okay, you've been a producer for how long now?
So I've been in exclusively podcasting since the beginning of 2019.
You say exclusively, what were you doing before?
So before I was at ESPN and I started at ESPN Radio in the summer of 2017. That was when I made my first foray into the adult professional world. And so then I didn't
adult professional world?
I actually like it. I like it. My college experience wasn't great. So I actually welcomed being an adult and I enjoyed it. So I started at ESPN Radio, absolutely hated it. Because radio, really? Unlike podcasting, 24/7, when you start at a massive company like ESPN, you're the low guy on the totem pole, nights, weekends, holidays, working Thanksgiving, my first Thanksgiving, just a couple months in working there, not being able to go home, the despair that was around the building at ESPN Bristol, Connecticut that day, I've never wanted to be anywhere less than at ESPN on Thanksgiving. It was terrible.
Yeah, that's sad.
And it was just consistently things like that. You're not really getting any opportunities. No one notices you because no one who matters is in the building. When you're in the building, you get no FaceTime with anyone. And so also you're in Central Connecticut. Where's that? It gets very cold. And so, you know, you're digging out your
parts unknown.
Yeah. You're digging out your car at 4 a.m. after your overnight shift in the snow. You're doing a 10 minute walk to your car when it's -5 degrees. It's a miserable existence for so many people. And I just didn't like it. I didn't like the work I was doing. I didn't like running a soundboard because, you know, you're kind of like the offensive line in football. If you do your job right, no one praises you. If you do your job wrong, everyone shits on you because your quarterback is getting sacked and then your team loses the game. Mm. So I didn't like it. And then because I'm very good at networking and advocating for myself, the first thing I learned at ESPN from one of my mentors, Brendan Peregrine, my first day, he said, no one will care about your career more than you. You have to take your career into your own hands. You have to advocate for Facts. Yourself. Yeah, you have to be not a big braggy show about it, but you need to tell people when you do something, people who matter, people who make decisions, and do it in a nice way, but letting them know that, hey, I'm here, I'm working hard, I'm doing X, Y, and Z that other people are not. And so that's what ultimately got me out of the despair of ESPN Radio, where I was not liking my job, not getting good opportunities, and also just very depressed. My first year in Connecticut, I was so depressed and miserable, Shani. And so I was able to get myself out of that because I had essentially become friends with the vice president of ESPN Audio, a man named Trog Keller, a very nice man. And again, I'm a low-level production assistant. No one is in the office of the vice president of ESPN Audio because that just wasn't something you did. But I didn't care. I didn't care about the rules. I'm like, I want to go talk to this guy, make a good impression, tell him what I'm doing, see what he can do for me. So when my ESPN Radio contract was up at the end of 2018.
Oh, so you were there for a year.
So I went to ESPN Radio on an 18-month contract. Oh. My first day there, they said, Troy, you can be the best production assistant we've ever had. We're probably going to have to let you go anyway at the end of the contract. It's a numbers game. Won't be anything personal. Money, resources, yada, yada.
So you were at ESPN Radio in total for 18 months?
So I was at ESPN Radio for 18 months.
A long time.
On the contract. Now, because I had done so well at networking and had gotten really good at my job, and also I picked up a bunch of side projects there. I worked with my idol, Jeremy Schapp, who is a legend of this business, not because anyone put me in that position, because I put myself in that position, wanted to do work that no one else wanted to do. And so when my contract was up, Trog Keller, the big boss, says to the ESPN Radio bosses underneath him, who were above me, find a way to keep Troy around. Create something for him. We're not letting go of this guy, which would not have happened had I not advocated for myself and picked out the right people to form relationships with. And so the contract was up, and they extended it 3 more months to 21 months to create something for me. And so in that time span was when I started doing both radio and podcasting. That's when I first got put with Ariel Helwani, working on the MMA show. And then from that point on, I got a full-time job at ESPN Radio exclusively in podcasting, where I was then immediately life transformed. Nine-ish to five-ish, not 24/7, weekends off. I'm producing a massive baseball podcast hosted by Buster Olney, a massive NBA podcast hosted by Brian Windhorst, with Adrian Wojnarowski, you know, who's a massive, who's like the Ariel Helwani of the NBA, and then with Ariel on his show. So yeah, completely went from ESPN Radio over to podcasting. Haven't looked back since.
That's amazing. So do you feel like it was so hard, in part because you were in such a cold place as well? So it's like, it's cold and the hours are shit and it's like that kind of ambiance?
No, I mean, I like the cold. I'm actually...
Do you?
I'm not a huge summer guy because I don't know how to dress in the summer. I much prefer wearing pants. I'm a big jeans guy. And so I will wear jeans up until 85 degrees. That's kind of my cutoff.
Dear God.
Then it gets too hot.
Were you wearing jeans in Vegas? I can't remember.
Mostly because it was
well,
work.
We're inside also.
Inside a bunch.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't mind the cold, but it's just a, you know, when you're walking out to your car alone at 4 a.m. after a job that you hate, after not really seeing anybody, after just pressing a couple buttons, you're depressed. It sucked.
Yeah.
Also, your off days are Mondays and Tuesdays. What are you going to do with that?
Mm.
You can't meet any girls that you want to date because you just don't have any normal time off to do that.
Hey, want
to
go on a date on Monday?
Exactly. Hey, you want to go on a...
How's a Monday lunch?
Yeah, exactly. But then, like, and I also am a huge morning person. In my ideal life, I'm up at 5 a.m. getting after it. Now I'm in this life, I was working until 6 a.m., but a part of me just knew that it was morning, so I couldn't really sleep. I would sleep from 7 a.m. To 11 a.m.
That's the worst.
My body wouldn't let me sleep during the day because I just loved the day so much.
Yeah.
So I would just be miserable just in this constant hamster's wheel of just being tired, going to the job I hate, not sleeping, getting addicted to caffeine, which I'd finally discovered, and now I'm a proud coffee addict. But it was miserable, Shani. It was miserable. And this is why I ultimately left ESPN, was because in the pandemic, obviously no live sports for a prolonged amount of time seriously hurt ESPN's bottom line. And so they laid off a bunch of people in November of 2020. They didn't lay me off, but they basically restructured my job because they laid off a bunch of people who were kind of dead weight at ESPN Radio. And they looked at me in podcasting, the only one with radio experience, and said, hey, like, we just laid off all these people. We need you in radio.
Oh, and you're like, no,
and
absolutely not.
I have never been more pissed off, Shani, than when I received the call from my podcasting boss who said, I know you're not going to like this, but this is above me. I'm trying to get you back here, but... we're probably just not going to be able to keep you here. Your radio was taking your headcount and you're going to go back to that life that you hated that you left. And the radio bosses tried to spin it to me as, this is an amazing opportunity for you. You're going to get to grow in so many ways. We love what you're doing. We're going to get to work with you and you know, and really bring the best out of you. And you can bring the best out of us. Take what you learned from podcasting and bring it over here. And I was just like, that's all BS. This is not what I want to do. And so... from that moment on, I knew I was going to leave. I just had to go figure out what I wanted to do. But I also, because I didn't want to, they wanted me to leave podcasting, be exclusively in radio. I was like, I love what I'm doing with Ariel. I genuinely care about him. He cares about me. He'll throw a fit if I leave. And then I loved all the other stuff I was doing as well. So I was a madman working in podcasting and radio simultaneously. My day, Shani, was podcast from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and then be, you know, off from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. radio, 7 p.m. to 3 a.m.
It's fucking hectic.
Wash, rinse, repeat. Hectic.
That is hectic.
It was terrible. And so, I mean, I knew I was only going to do that for a short amount of time until I left. And then I did in the February of 2021.
I mean, it's completely not sustainable.
No.
But, I there comes a point where it's like, no matter how big the company is, how glamorous you feel like it is, ESPN, ooh, la la, whatever, you know, that stature has in someone's heart, I think it's so important that you recognize the fact that that was so not sustainable for you and you didn't want to go back to that place, no matter what, how they spinned it, how good it was going to be for your career, whatever it was that they wanted to throw on you, you knew, like, no, that's just not, it's not for me and it's not what I love to do and I'm going to prioritize, you know, being an enjoyable human being and actually liking my life.
Right, and my best friends were all still in radio because you kind of develop this unique friendship with the guys that and girls that you're in the trenches with on those overnight shifts. You get really close to them. And so I was still really good friends with a bunch of radio people. I would go out with my two best guy friends, Connor and Jake. We would go out to Screenless Saturday.
Wait, Connor?
Connor, yeah, GC.
He was from ESPN. I was going to ask you how you guys were friends.
Yeah, yeah. So we worked in the trenches together, and we would go out to breakfast every Saturday. Screenless Saturday is my thing where I don't turn my phone on Saturdays.
You are Jewish.
Yeah, I guess so. So we would leave our phones in the car. We would go to a new breakfast spot in Central Connecticut every Saturday, and Connor and Jake would essentially just rant about how terrible their lives were at ESPN Radio. And I felt a sense of Jewish guilt because I was loving my life in podcasting. So I would just keep my mouth shut. But I heard all the horror stories about radio, all the drama about everything that's going on. It hadn't changed since I left. And so no matter how much the ESPN Radio people tried to spin it to me that this was a great opportunity, I'm like, I know what this
screw
is.
That.
I know what I'm getting myself into. This isn't what I want to do. I left this for a reason. I love what I'm doing right now. I'm working with bigger names, with bigger reaches. In podcasting, you know, you can see who's listening. You can see your data. In radio, you can't. And it's a very antiquated system as well.
I think radio is also one of those things that, like, it obviously is still very active. Don't get me wrong. People listen to the radio. I don't think it's a dead medium per se, but I do think it's just so inconvenient for any sort of, like, if you're a creator, you really want to be able to reach as many people as you can at their time frame. And so this idea of having to catch people at a certain hour and this and that is, like, it's really, I don't know, I find that a very big struggle to me.
Yeah.
It's already hard to reach audiences when you're putting stuff out there that's going to last forever, let alone imagine having to try to reach people. It's like doing a live video or a live podcast that you delete right after.
Right.
That is so, that's a sad thought to me.
Yeah.
Like that content would never live on forever to me sounds depressing. I'm like, damn, I just did all that and now it's fucking gone. Like it's just gone. It's just gone.
And every meeting, every strategy meeting we would be in for ESPN Radio would be like, well, when people are tuning in from their cars at this moment, yada, yada. Every decision we make was based on people in their cars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all car based.
I'm like, people listen in a variety of ways. What I love about podcasting for an active person like myself, selfishly as listeners, I can listen to it when I'm cooking, when I'm cleaning, when I'm on the at the gym, on a walk, on a plane. You can listen to it anywhere. You can't do that with live radio.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, the car really actually is the only place that I ever will turn into a radio if I do. And it's because I haven't plugged in my phone yet.
Yeah. The only situation in which radio is great, and, you know, I'm hoping that an app like Spotify Live can get to this place.
Collins.
Breaking news situations like Kobe Bryant dies, I turn on ESPN Radio because they're reacting live
in the
moment. Tom Brady retired earlier this year. I turned on ESPN Radio to get instant reaction
to that.
Wait,
did he unretire though? Right?
Yeah, he unretired.
Okay.
But he
did originally retire.
He did retire.
Right.
Yeah, and now he and Giselle are on the outs, apparently. Yeah, you didn't see this?
You telling me he's available?
It's not officially. They hired divorce lawyers. So whatever that means, I don't know how far along in the process you are.
I'm available on Instagram, Tom.
No, I want Tom Brady.
We'll fight for him.
Me, you, and the rest of the world.
I like this. I love Spotify Live. I love live audio. I'm a big fan of that.
Powerful.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think it's really awesome how now they've incorporated the recording aspect of podcasting with live audio. Like on Clubhouse, when I was first on Clubhouse, there was no recording available. Like you had to record it yourself. Do like I have like that Zoom H whatever the fuck that you plug it. No, sorry.
Zoom H6.
No, not the Zoom H6. I have that, but it's the other thing that they use. It's literally right there in its box still. I forget what it's called, but it's like you plug it into your phone. So people were doing it that way where they could get like proper audio straight into it and then recording from there. But that's such a complicated system. You know, I was just like on the phone. I like being just on the phone and holding it. So live audio has its features for sure in that way, but it was never, you know, if I was hosting a show on Clubhouse, I would have recorded it kind of a thing. Mm. You know what I mean? As opposed to just joining or calling in, which is so fun and so interactive.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really big plus. But it's even more accessible on live audio than it is on radio. Because calling into a radio station, you're up against other people.
Right.
I mean, I once called like a million times to get these tickets to the screening of the Hangover movie. And I had to call like 80,000 times. And I waited for every 20-minute thing.
There's time constraints. You know, hey, we've got a hard out right now.
Yeah. And then they didn't even play my winning of the tickets because I cursed too much.
That's about right.
Which was hilarious. I was like, damn, but I was just so excited. So yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like, there's pluses and minuses to everything, but I love podcasting and I think it's cool. That's why I connect so much with you, because you obviously love this industry and you're so ingrained in it. Were you hosting it all on radio when you were there?
At ESPN?
No.
No.
No? No,
it was very discouraged. Everyone,
really?
Yeah, everyone who is a producer or production assistant goes there with the dream of, oh, I want to be on air. I want to be the next Mike Greenberg at ESPN Radio. They actively discourage that. They pretty much tell you on the first day, just so you know,
you're not talent.
You're not going to be on air.
But why?
I don't know. I don't know why they were that way, but that was just kind of the ethos that they operate under, because they would all ask us, oh, you know, your first day, what do you want to do here? And everyone pretty much said, I want to be on air. I actually didn't say that. I didn't have any interest in that. But they just don't. It's like, talent is talent. Producers are producers. And there was like a clear, I'm better than you mentality.
Oh my God. That's nauseating just thinking about that. But also on the other side of it, as a producer, I find working with producers on air so much easier than working with non-producers on air. Someone who's coming in as a host, they don't understand the idea of keeping their audio level, of, you know, where they should be placed on the mic, of like just basic things that a producer would know. Or even, you know, if you're like rubbing the mic, I get guests who do that sometimes. My dad even, but he's been hosting for years and I always tell him, like, stop fidgeting with everything. Right. But they do that. And when you get a producer on, they're not really, like, they're pretty, you know, to me, they actually make even better hosts because they understand the back end as well. Which I think is really cool. So it's kind of weird that they would discourage that.
I love working with hosts who have producer experience. And Ariel has some, like, early on in his career. He did some behind the scenes stuff. He is a tremendous producer on the air. He's great. I am so blessed, Shani. I am the luckiest producer in the history of the world in terms of the caliber of talent that I have worked with.
You seriously are. Yeah, you seriously are.
At ESPN Radio, I work with Jeremy Schapp, icon, legend. Brian Windhorst, Buster Olney, respective goats in their industry. Ariel, the same deal. And then I also work with Peter Rosenberg at The Ringer, who I worked with a little bit at ESPN, who's kind of a different... He's very similar to Ariel in terms of how versatile and professional he is.
He's awesome.
He's amazing. I don't have to coach anyone. I don't have to keep anyone on task. I don't have to write entire show outlines for these people. They're just so good. They know what the audience wants. They know what's important. My job essentially with all these people is just get the final product from A to B.
God, that's such a delight.
It's a delight.
I mean, I also I focused on coaching for a while. So that was really fun for me. That was like something that I just offered as a separate service. Like, if you want to be coached on mic. So I do like doing that. I think it's an important thing that a lot of people don't realize they need to practice and train at. You know, it's something that you might have a natural ability to have, like, a great personality. You might be great on camera. You might be all of those things. But when you're not used to sitting at a mic and sitting and doing like a podcasting style situation where, like, this is in your face, you know, you're not mic'd up and it's not hiding and you don't have a boom over here. Like, it's a very different kind of presence that's required, because you have to be thinking of different things and you also have to be really present and you also have to be able to, like, juggle a few different things. Like, let's say I have a host who's going to be recording themselves remote, right? They need to be aware of, like, all the different things that are happening. Make sure you're checking that it's still recording. Make sure you're looking at your audio levels while you're also engaging, while you're also paying attention to your guest. And it's something that, you know, it's not to be taken lightly how different it is to work with different calibers of people. Because when you're working with the people that you've worked with, those hosts, I mean, it's night and day. It must be so cool.
It's great. I thank my lucky stars every time. I mean, I don't need to do much prep for my shows, especially when a lot of your shows are based around fights that just happen. your prep is watching the fights. What is better to prep than that? But it's great. I check in with myself constantly about how lucky I am and how grateful. Now, again, if someone needs coaching, after I left ESPN, I was coaching Chris Weidman, former UFC champion. He had zero experience in the space at all. So I was there holding his hand every step of the way, which was nice, just to show myself, I can actually do this. I'm capable of doing this. I know what I'm doing. So I've gotten myself to a point, and I'm now starting to really transition my skill set from audio to video, because that's clear where all of this is going. I've kind of mastered podcasting in the audio sense. I really think there's any... you could throw any podcast in the world to me. Rogan, Call Her Daddy, Armchair Expert, the Princess Meghan Markle's podcast.
Oh, yeah, Archetypes.
Sure. Archetypes.
Is it Archetype or Archetype?
Well, the her
because it's like
it's Archwell is her studio's name, but right. The podcast is Archetype.
Interesting.
I don't know how you say it. Anyway, the point is, you throw any podcast like that to me, I'll get it down in 20 minutes.
Yeah,
that's how confident I am.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, that's fantastic. The audio I find very easy to edit. I think if you're moving from video to audio, it's like fantastic. Going the other way is slightly more complicated, but you got this. Like, it's
That's why I originally wanted to be in video. My original dream was I want to work on documentaries that change the world.
Oh,
right. And
don't we all have
and
dreams?
And I was doing that in college. I was really perfecting video, but then I got introduced to audio in college as well. I was like, this is so much easier, so much less time consuming. Yeah. Things don't freeze and break down. You don't lose your projects that you're editing all the time. So that's when I got into audio, but I'm now getting back into video, especially because right now is this perfect storm of where on social media, I'm editing a bunch of stuff for TikTok and Reels, and all the traditional rules about video editing are just going out the door.
Yeah.
I'm gone. Jump cutting up a storm and no one cares.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how that's happening now? Like, you can just, like, it's so weird when I watch some of these, like, other people's podcast clips that do really, really well, and I see that they've cut out all the ums and all the yes, and it sounds really choppy, but people love it, and it gets the point across. So I started doing that, too. I'll cut out some likes and some ums and whatever for my social clips, because it does streamline the listening process for the person, and no one has an attention span on TikTok and Instagram. Yeah. So you really, they're not trying to sit through,
right.
Try working with Israeli hosts. It is one of the most miserable editing experiences.
Why is that?
Because they go, so Troy, Farkas, yeah, it's a lot. So I like cut out like 50% of the episode will get chopped.
My favorite thing is with each host you work with, you start to notice all of their tendencies and you develop an ear specifically for them and you just...
Yes, like, and you can see their audio wave. You know, like, if it's like an.
I know what Ariel's like stuttering voice sounds like, and I know exactly how to edit it every time. Ditto with Chael Sonnen. Ditto with Peter Rosenberg.
But like, it's also like, you know what the audio, what the wave looks like, right? Like, I know exactly what my dad's audio waves look like. Like, to a T, I can tell you what word he's saying. When I'm like, oh, I got to cut that out. That's an You know, that's an easy one.
Yeah.
It's so interesting when you've worked with someone for so long and you just know their voice. Do you find it hard to edit yourself, like your podcast, editing your own voice?
In terms of just because most people hear their voice and, like,
and they hate it, yes.
No, I actually don't hate my voice that much. Listening to myself is not... When I first started podcasting myself, I put out my first episode in September 2020. It was hard to listen to at first, but I quickly...
Adapted, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how that happens. I find that people who... hosts who never have to edit their shows, a lot of times they won't even listen back to their shows. It drives me bonkers because I'm like, please, this is how you can improve. Just listen to it. You don't even have to edit it. Just listen to it. Just hear yourself and you'll be able to understand the words you're overusing, the phrases you want to cut out.
The likes.
Yes, the likes, the ums, the all of this. It makes it so much easier to be able to improve when you're listening to it. So I always find that people who edit their own podcasts will improve at a much faster rate because they have to go through and they have to do that. They have to chop everything up.
Yeah, how do you feel about, because, and this is true of all, whether it's writing, whatever, being your own editor is very difficult because you are selfish and you don't want to admit that's, you know, hey, this 3 minutes we just did here, like, that wasn't good. I should just cut that out. It's very hard for, it's easier for me to tell Ariel, hey, this wasn't good. Let's cut this. But then I could turn around and create that exact same piece of content myself and be like, oh, that was gold. Because it's very hard for you to take out your own stuff that you did.
I find it's the opposite. I have a hard time, like, for example, the Chuck Liddell episode, bless his soul for coming and driving all the way to this fucking house to do this episode. Amazing. But I didn't love how I hosted it. Mm. So it's been very hard for me to get through the edit because I'm like, ugh, why did you interrupt him again? Why did you interrupt him again? Why did you interrupt him? It just drives me crazy how much I interrupted him. So there are things, like, I was clipping out a few things and I was like, and I become more critical of myself during moments like that. But when it's But when it's like episodes that I love, then I agree with you. Then I will leave in stuff that I probably would have chopped out for other people. But I also think you have to find that a nice balance, and you also really have to be able to step back. You have to be able to step back and listen to it with an objective ear. Even if you feel like, ooh, was I oversharing or was that cringe? You have to say, well, if somebody else was saying this, would I appreciate it? Would I like it? Would I care?
That's a good point.
You know? And something, so we were talking about Joe Rogan earlier. Something I like about him is how little he's edited his shows over the years, where there's been obviously a lot of shit that's come out that people hate. Mm. There'll be clips that where he sounds like a fucking idiot, and he still posts those moments. And so to me, I kind of admire that because it shows progression as a human. We're all, we don't always say the things we mean, know? And that's something that a lot of people don't seem to like to talk about anymore, which is like this idea that anything that anybody says they should be held accountable for, which to an extent, sure. But also we don't always say the things we mean and we don't always say them the way that we want to say them.
Exactly. Oh, I mess up all the time in podcasting and you know, I'm not super seasoned. So I always stumble over my words, say something that's different than how I meant to say it. And so it might sound bad, but I am all for reflecting on your mistakes and listening back to them and growing from them. And so I like a guy like Rogan who hasn't rushed to drop everything that when he said in 2012 was like more accepted than it is in 2022. So
yeah,
I'm here for it.
Yeah. Or even, I don't know. There's so many moments where I'll listen to you. So the other thing is like when I'm listening to somebody else's show and I hear a part where I think to myself, damn, that was so stupid. I can't believe you just released that. But then I think to myself, you know what? I appreciate that kind of confidence or that sort of ability to just put shit out there, not really care. Maybe they don't even like what they just released. Maybe they don't like that clip or that skit or that this, but they worked hard in it and they just want to put it out there. And who knows, somebody might resonate with it, you know? So I appreciate that kind of like rawness and authenticity and just like lack of perfectionism. I mean, I'm still trying to get over that.
Yeah.
Being a perfectionist is like has always been my thing, but it's a huge hindrance to this world and life in general.
How much do you feel self-conscious of the stuff that you put out? Do you ever, whether it's a social clip or a podcast in general, do you think, I don't know if I want to promote this or like, I feel uncomfortable. Who am I to say this? You know, cause like, I know when I put stuff out, whether it's with my writing or my podcast, I'm like, what is the kid in high school that I sat next to going to think about this? And I don't know why the fuck I care, but I do. And we all do. We all care what other people think about us.
Yeah. To an extent, it's not that I don't know. I care more about like what I think about me. So if I watch something that I think, ooh, I don't know. Self-conscious is such an interesting word because so Instagram, I didn't get on Instagram for a long time. And the reason was because I hated the filters. I didn't like that. This was way back in 2012, right? So imagine how much I hate the filters now, you know? And it used to make me so sad to see how much people were distorting themselves. And this was, again, in 2012, the filters were fucking nothing. They were like color filters.
Right.
So for me, a big part of what I love to do on social and what I love to do with the podcast is put out stuff that I feel like, that I just feel like other people wouldn't be comfortable putting out, like, you know, posting a clip on my Instagram story where my skin is shit or where I look crap, where my hair is messy, where I'm in pajamas, where I'm a normal human being
slapped by that
where person. I'm getting my face slapped. Like, I like posting that kind of stuff because I feel like there's such a hesitance now for people to post it. And if we all act perfect on social media all the time, aren't we just gonna, like, I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah.
I really don't. And I also don't want the expectation for people who know me in real life to I don't want people to expect me to be in makeup and looking perfect every single time I see them, because that's not gonna happen.
Right.
So what happens when I rock up one day looking like shit? They're gonna be like, whoa, where'd you, like, are you Shawnee? Like, who is that? It's like, yeah, bitch, it's me. It's me underneath it all, you know? So I don't know that I ever really get too self-conscious. And I really like myself.
Good.
I really, really like I'm a big fan of me. And I really love me. And I don't always know that everybody else loves me. I don't, some people for sure hate me because I've been mean to them. It happens, you know, and there's probably some people who don't resonate with my humor or whatever it is, but I don't know that I really care because it's just like, why would they care? Even if they don't like me, why are they even focused on me? It'd be so weird for me. It's weird. The thought of somebody thinking of me in that kind of way and judging me or judging a clip to me seems like a massive waste of time on their end. Mm. So if someone's doing that, I'm thinking to myself, like, that's just really depressing for them. Why do they care? So why should I care? Do you know what I mean?
So you're not one of these people who wants just everyone to love them. You've accepted people are not going to like me, but I'm not going to change who I am based on other people's opinions.
Yeah. I really value, though, my close friends and family's yes. opinions. So more so my close friends, actually, because I've obviously selected them in my life, and I really have let them get to know me, and I respect their thoughts. So if they approach me with something, if I'm, like, let's say I'm crying about something that's really stupid, and they're like, Shawnee, get the fuck over this. Like, this is so ridiculous. I take that to heart. I think to myself, yeah. like, why are you thinking that? You're someone I highly respect. You know me very well. But if it's some random person online who doesn't like me, it's yeah. like, you don't even know me.
Yeah.
If real close friends are upset with something I've done, or they think I need to make a change, or they're seeing something that's wrong, that's something that I definitely do value. And I do care about that.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. You're right. When everyone, and I've been receiving some weird comments online recently. And again, I hardly speak on the Ring MMA show or on Cheap Heat, but for when I do, I always get... You know your role. That one really gets
to me.
Oh,
do you get a know your role?
Yeah, I get a know your role. And that one specifically, I hate because my basketball coach used to say that to me as well when I was growing up, know your role. Because I was very good on defense, not on offense. And then I would try to play offense and be like, no, chill, know your role. So that one gets me, and other people talk to me online as well. And then it sits with you. You let it affect you. But then you have to remind yourself, check yourself. Do my friends and family, do the people in my innermost circle, what do they think about me? Mm. That's all that matters. And you know, I know it's easier said than done because we are human. Words hurt. And that's this also, I'm going to look straight into camera three here.
Yeah, camera three.
If you're a troll online, if you are going out of your way to comment on someone else's TikTok, on their photo on Instagram, to tell them that they're ugly, that they're stupid, that they're a hoe, anything like that, reevaluate what you're doing with your life. Because why are you putting that kind of negativity into the world? I could never, ever, Shawnee, go on someone's page and leave them negativity like that. Mm. I am just such a big proponent of positivity, of hyping people up. And this is another thing I get. I get a lot of guys. A lot of guys don't like me because...
Wait, I need to tell the gardeners to fuck
okay.
off.
Okay, yes, please do that.
Please continue ranting to camera three.
Yes. So a lot of guys don't like me because... I hype up the women in my life so much, or yeah, like I'll go on my friends' pages and tell them in the comments, you look so hot, you're killing it, no. like you're great, you can get any guy you want, and I'll tell them that in person as well. And the guys think it's like,
you sound like my grandma.
Guys think it's like, dude, you're simping so hard for these girls, you want them so bad. Like, no, that's not it at all. It's just I know I'm close with a lot of women. I know what women go through on a daily basis. I've heard the horror stories. I just want to give them as much love and confidence as I can. And I want to do that with everyone in my life. I want to tell them, you're killing it. Like, you deserve the world. You look so hot today. Like, go crush it. Go have a great weekend. I just love spreading good vibes. I'm obsessed with it.
I love that. I love that because, you know, women online, we go through hell and yeah. back. I used to be a big anti-blocker. Like, I would think, oh, you don't have to block people. I'm so the opposite now. I block, mute, okay. restrict. I don't give a shit. Like, if you are in my DMs and you're making me feel uncomfortable, you are getting blocked. There are so many, like, there are guys who will, like, if I'm like posting a story where I'm like being loud, for example, I had guys reply like, ooh, you're probably so loud. You're a moaner,
fuck
aren't
that.
You? And I'm like,
Jesus.
That is so creepy. Like, that is just so weird. Or I'll get such fucking weird DMs, Troy. Like, it's
especially
so,
in the UFC space, which is very male, very toxic male dominated.
It's
God.
It's so weird. I don't really. So yeah, I'm a big proponent of like just blocking out that kind of stuff. But I'm also a big fan of hyping people up. I love doing that as well. And I do get that where it's like, oh, you're sucking up to people. I get that a lot. Instead of like, oh, you're simping, I get the suck up. But I don't really care. Like, I just, yeah. you know, so what? Like, that person got so happy because I complimented
exactly.
them. So that's all I really give a shit about
exactly.
at the end of the day.
Exactly.
It's, what do you, so obviously with the Spotify live show transitioning to like the super engaging community and stuff, do you feel like you're getting so many more messages now than when you were just producing the shows at ESPN and stuff like that?
You mean like negative messages?
Yeah, negative, also positive, I guess.
No. So at ESPN, we just had, I mean, ESPN, you, and this is the thing I do miss about ESPN is the reach and the name recognition of ESPN. I mean, the shows that I was working on were getting 100, 200,000 listens. I haven't worked on a show since that sniffs that kind of audience. So just from a sheer numbers game, I was hearing from more people who listen to the shows at ESPN than I do now. But conversely, smaller audiences, way more positive engagement. You know, you're friends with a bunch of these people of the Ringer MMA show community. The love that we get from these people, the love that I get from these people, which is overwhelmingly positive, only small negative, it's amazing. I've never been a part of anything like it. Our hosts, Ariel, Pizza Carroll, Chuck Mindenhall, I can speak for all of them when I say it's some of the most rewarding work that we've done in our careers. And Chuck and Pizza and Ariel have all been around the block. They've worked for a lot of different people, done a lot of different things. And this is, I love this. There's nothing, listen, Shawnee, I'm spending my Saturday nights watching fights and then staying up until 4 a.m. Eastern time editing podcasts. I am dead tired. I'm slamming coffee at 11 p.m. to stay up. I'm slapping myself in the face with cold water at 2 a.m. just to stay up and alert to do my work. There's nothing else I'd rather be doing. I love it.
It's great. I mean, not to be dramatic, but in a way, it has definitely changed my life hopping onto that show.
Yeah.
I mean, I covered 272. I never thought I'd like cover an event as press. Yeah, I felt I did get ghosted, but I feel almost even cooler for that because now I feel like they hate me because I like Ariel and like I'm a fan of that. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, that's right. I'm not going to bow down just to your little whatever it is. But it is really cool. Like, it's so much fun and this sort of like community. And obviously, Helwani, I mean, I've been a fan of him for years. He's a Montreal Jew. This is someone who's like, I can relate to so aggressively. It's like ridiculous. You know, we have mutual family, friends and stuff in Montreal. Like, there's so many crossing of paths that it was so cool. And I remember when I got the notifications coming into my phone, I got them for like 4 months before I ever joined in, because I joined, I think, in December. And I kept getting them, but I was never home after the fights. I was never on my phone. I would see them 3 hours later and then pop in and the rooms were closed already. And my first time popping in there, I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And I had that experience on Clubhouse a lot where I was talking to, you know.
We're going to have to blurt that word out of this episode, by the way.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? I the app in which that got me, it did make me a lot of money, I will say. I did make a good chunk of change off of that CH place. The other app, the not green app. But it was, you know, I'd had that experience on there, so I felt like comfortable on social audio. I felt comfortable going into there. But I didn't have, I had Misha Tate on Clubhouse. That was cool.
Wow.
That was really fun. So we did a room with her, but that room was six people. It was a watch along for one championship. It was just me, one of my friends, her, the guy who runs One PR, used to. Yeah, it was like really freaking cool. So that experience, then moving in and then talking to Ariel, I was just like, this is really freaking sick. You know, this is dope. This is so engaging. And it's such a fun way to build a community around a healthy community, around a sport which is notorious for having really unhealthy communities.
Absolutely. And that's the most like amazing thing about it is because, and I'm going to knock on this wood right here, we've all kind of been waiting. Like, when is this going
to... Yeah, when's
it going
to stop?
When's this going to turn? This sounds too good to be true. And we did... Again, just sheer numbers game after the UFC 279 weigh-ins where all that craziness, Diaz, Chimaev, yada, yada, we had 40,000 people. So just sheer numbers game, people who were showing up for the first time, didn't know what this was. We did start to get some bad apples there, and hopefully...
They were so mean to me. It was crazy.
Oh God, yeah, I remember that.
I was so hormonal, too, and I was like, in the girls' chat, I'm like, why is everyone being mean?
Hopefully for UFC 280 next week, we still get a big audience, but we get that positivity back. And I've made so many friendships from this. People who, you know... I was in the UK this summer visiting them, having, we talked about Nim and Sinena earlier, friends with them. I'm talking to people on so many different platforms, Instagram, Twitter, FaceTime, WhatsApp. It's amazing. I this sport has given me so many memories, friends, money, meaning, purpose. It's been incredible.
It's awesome. The Telegram group chats are pretty cool. We've got three. We have the girls chat.
I'm not invited.
The OG. I don't know if you want
it. I don't want it. Because I do need, as much as I want to be in.
You need separation.
As much as I want to be in, because I genuinely like all you guys, I also work on the show and, you know.
Church and state.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah. No, I hear that. I totally hear that. I think there's, I mean, there's also, you know, I've been a part of like quite a few online communities, and there is a point where sometimes people can take things too far. And so you do want to like keep that. I mean, to a certain extent, you want to keep some form of boundary where you feel like, listen, we're all great friends, but some, you know, you can't message me 24/7, right? It's impossible to keep up with that. And then you feel bad. Yeah. Killshaw, what's up? I love him. He's so great. Oh, he's going to be in New York. You'll meet him, I guess.
Supposedly. I don't believe that he exists. Although, I've heard some stories.
Well, he went to Vegas.
I've heard some stories.
He went to Vegas. Apparently, yeah. They all agreed not to take pictures of him, which I think is so funny, which is just fucking hilarious. But, I mean, online communities, you know, they can gravitate towards different things, towards like different niche experiences. But I've been in so many, and I really tried finding a UFC one for a while. I was in a few Facebook groups. I like, you know, dabbled in some Reddit pages and some of the Twitter things, whatever. But I never really found anywhere that felt welcoming enough. Like even the UFC Israel group, like I'd get hounded on in there. And like that, it was just like, you know, my Hebrew's not great. I might say things that are different. Or in the main UFC group that I was on Facebook, people would rip into me. They'd be like, oh, this chick again. And I'm like, all right. So yeah. I just kind of stopped engaging. So it is really cool because it's hard for women to find a space in the MMA world that isn't a trash can.
Right.
And that's what a lot of us have felt, like Amber and Penny and Mel and all these amazing women who've like come together and formed this community, and Angela and like all these just wonderful people. We always talk about it. We're like, and at the 279 weigh-ins, we're like, fuck these guys. They're ruining our safe space. You know, this is like our one spot.
Right.
So it is really cool. But how do you feel like it compares to your wrestling show's audience? I'm so curious about that group. Are they as like engaged and that same sort of community aspect that we have? Is it?
No. There's something about Ariel. He has this ability to just pull people together and rally around him. You know, I always joke, he is the sun and we are what orbits around him. He gives life to all of this. That doesn't exist, at least not in the shows that I work on in the wrestling space. Also, the shows I work on are not on Spotify Live. They're just straight podcasts.
Oh.
So you don't get that in real time interaction that we're getting on the MMA show, which is what separates us.
All right, people, before we jump right back into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out to our guest today, Troy Farkas. Why, you may ask? Because he is releasing his first ever book. It's coming out August 18th. Pre-orders start on July 28th, so that's this week. I'm going to put all of the information for links and where you can buy it in the description, so make sure you check that out. It's a compilation of just so many phenomenal essays written, of course, by Troy. I've been a paid Substack subscriber of his for so long, and honestly, I cannot recommend his writing enough. So I'm so excited for him. I'm so proud. And it's just great. I just got an advanced copy of it, and I've been reading through bits of it. So can't recommend it enough. It is called Surrender, A Guide to Living Your Best Life in Your 20s by Troy Farkas. Check it out. Link is in the description.
That is something that is important, I want to say, because in this era of everything that the pandemic accelerated, everything moving online, now the metaverse is happening, UFC and Meta now have this partnership.
LFA, maybe.
As our lives are increasingly moving online, digital, and as our relationships are moving that way, we are losing this face-to-face interaction. We are losing what makes us human. And what makes us human is wanting to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And so I would urge everyone who is watching, listening to this episode, find something to be a part of on, like, whether you can do that in your actual community, whether it's the local softball team or, you know, there's a gardening club or book club, do that. If those things aren't available to you, try to find something online around a common interest, like the UFC, like pro wrestling, or whatever else that tickles your fancy.
Yeah, there's something special about social audio. That's why Clubhouse was so big during that time, because we were all home. Pandemic had hit LA pretty hard because we were shut down for a very long time.
Y'all couldn't go on the beach.
No, and we couldn't go to restaurants. Yeah. We couldn't do shit. It was miserable. It was just so closed here for so long when everywhere else was open and no mask mandates anywhere else. And here, it just felt so archaic coming back into LA. So a lot of my Clubhouse friends were from LA. We got, you know, we were on the app 24/7 because it's how we could have fun. We had the craziest times on there, and it was such a peak moment. But you know, there isn't as much of that need for that. So that's why I think a lot of that stuff has died down.
Yeah.
Which is why it is still cool to watch a social audio show booming. Yeah. But I think fighting is something that really, you know, it's like people are like really fans. Like I'm a
really hardcore,
you know, I fucking love watching the fight. I get so much satisfaction out of watching a fight. I will cry during some fights if they're that good. Like, I'm not even kidding. It's like it really brings something. So having a space where I can talk about it is always so exciting. So, the other online community that you were a part of, or the first one, I guess, was VFriends, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So talk to me about that. How does that compare to this? And are you still kind of involved or not really?
I've really taken my foot off the gas in the crypto NFT world.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, haven't we all? So it could, honestly, I'm afraid to look at
my... Oh, no, I haven't opened my portfolio in months.
I'm afraid to look at my MetaMask. I can't. I didn't go to VCon. I was supposed to. I didn't go to VCon. I was going through some stuff at the moment. And so I just didn't... I just canceled my hotel and whatnot. So I didn't go. Had I gone, I'm sure I would feel a lot more... invested in it and unified in it. But also VFriends got so big so quickly. I was in the Discords, you know, I was one of the first people in the Discords, but then it just got so big, like hundreds of thousands of people where, you know, you're not connecting with anyone at that point. The chats are moving so quickly. So many people are in there. How can I make a quick buck? Like, what's the floor price of this? Yada, yada, yada. And just like everyone's intentions were all over the place. So I haven't really been, I mean, I still follow, I still love Gary Vee. I'm obsessed with him. Huge role model of mine. Love the vibes he puts out in the world. I think he's a fantastic entrepreneur. I love your episode that you did with him. Go check it out if you haven't. And
it shockingly is not my highest.
I know. I was wondering that.
It's actually pretty mid low tier.
I know. I don't get that because everything he does blows up. But anyway, long story short, no, I'm not really tracking the VFriends day in day out. Because also that was when I got into that. That was like a low moment in my life. Like in the pandemic, I was living in Denver at the time and I was all alone and isolated.
You've lived fucking everywhere.
And I just didn't really have much of a life. So I just buried myself into this online community, which I now, as the world is back to normal, I don't really need as much anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to maintain that same sense of community when it gets so big.
Right.
It's like you want your shows to grow, but at the same time you want that engagement to remain in the same kind of manner that it's always been, where the vibes are positive and everything's cool and like people are actually making friends, as opposed to it being 90,000 people chatting and you can't keep up with anything.
Right. And that's why we're kind of always with two ends with the Ring of Mace show. We want to grow it, but we don't really promote it that much.
I noticed that.
We don't promote the Twitter community that much because we don't want this to get too big. We don't want to invite a lot of bad apples here. We just want to keep this good vibes. Let's talk about fights. Let's crack some jokes. Let's have a lot of the same people calling in and you know, continuing kind of storylines throughout each show.
Yeah.
Because that's what keeps it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Callers. Brett, I always, whenever I think of love like Brett. Regular callers, I just think of Brett because I love him so much. He is the funniest guy ever. Yeah. And these shows bring a light to people like that, you know? Yeah. Brett's not out there making impression content, which he should be, but he's not. So you'd never find him otherwise. You can open it up if it's too... I don't know if it's hurting your head.
That'd be good.
Okay, great. But it's... I don't know. It's just really cool. I like... But if you grow slowly, then you can maintain the precedent within the ambient, like within the community, within the chat, within the vibes. Like you can maintain that precedent because the regulars will sort of set the tone. And then, you know, if a few more people join in, but when it's like 50,000 people join at once, impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just becomes hard. All right. So let's, what do I want to pivot to? There's so many things because there's so much podcasting, but there's also real life stuff really curious to talk to you about. So we might jump back to podcasts after, but okay, this one thing that I found about you online, which you are elusive online. There's not like that much about you out there. There's a lot of career stuff, but there's not like life stuff. Like if you search Shawnee Suisa and you go deep, you will find embarrassing shit of me everywhere.
I'm very low key. And I told myself going into this conversation today, you know what? I'm not hide so much. Because again, it comes back to that thing of like, I'm very perceptive of how people will receive me because I have a very critical inner voice, and no one would be friends with you wouldn't be friends with that critical voice that we all have, that like person on your shoulder. I have like a very mean voice up here. And so I don't want to like
kill him.
I don't want to like bring that out to the world. But then over the past year, I've kind of learned, wait, we all have that. We all have this side of us that we don't really like.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm now more open about it. So I'm ready to talk about whatever.
Hell yeah. Isn't it weird how all of our experiences are so similar?
Yeah.
It's disturbingly strange.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of reading the comment sections online. And every reel lately that's been like, I don't know, they're all fucking relatable to me at this point because my algorithm just knows me so well. But every comment is you'll look in the comment section and they'll be like, wow, I feel like we're all living the exact same lives. Mm. Like, so no one has a unique experience. Oh my God, relatable. And it's crazy because it really is, you know, it's true. So something that you did years ago, I think this was during high school, was this Deanna's Dugout?
Yeah.
The charity?
Yeah.
So is this your friend who passed in the car accident?
Yeah.
So can you so first of all, tell us about her and the accident, and then talk about the Dugout charity that you ran, because that was really cool.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So Deanna Rivers was a very good friend of mine. We met when I was in ninth grade, she was in 10th grade. She was the manager of my JV basketball team. So she would sit on the end of the bench, and she was family friends with the coach of my team, Coach Hunter. She would sit on the other bench. She would keep all of our stats for us, and she would get us things and get us water, and would be kind of like our hype person on the bus to and from games, whatnot. So we got really close after that first season. We'd be talking on the phone all the time. I went to her house. I watched Duke basketball games with her. That was kind of our thing. And so we got really close really fast. I would help her with her homework. I was a history nerd, so I would do her history homework for her lovingly, gladly. And we would walk laps around the high school in the mornings before class started. She would feed me cinnamon apples that her mother would make with me in mind. And so we were really close. And I actually introduced one of my really good friends, Matt Hardy. I introduced Matt to Deanna with thinking of like, oh, I think they could be a really good, really good fit here. Matt didn't have any, like Matt was kind of losing his way, and I knew Deanna would kind of right the ship for him. And so they started dating and they had a wonderful relationship. But Matt, I love him, and he wasn't too comfortable. And this has actually been a theme in my life with a lot of the girlfriends that I have. The men in their lives are not comfortable with me as much. They see me as a threat when I'm not at all. So Matt kind of asked me to back off a little bit, to not be as close with Deanna.
Was that kind of what caused the riff?
So December 1st, 2012, we're approaching the 10-year anniversary. I had just seen Deanna the night before at my basketball game. And, you know, we had been seeing each other. We'd stayed friendly. I would see her in school, say hi, but we were nowhere near the level of closeness that we were, because Matt had kind of told me to back off a little bit. And I respected that. I was friends with Matt, and, you know, I wanted them to be happy. But December 1st, Deanna, Matt went to a basketball game in upstate New York. This, like, it's Siena versus UAlbany, which is like the big event in sports in upstate New York every year. It was Deanna and Matt, and then Chris Stewart and Bailey Wind. Dennis Drew was this like low life 23-year-old kid who at 10 p.m. on a Saturday night was driving recklessly on the highway, made a triple lane change, drunk, high, speeding, on his way to get more drugs. He just left the bar in Albany, New York. He was drunk leaving. They let him leave when they shouldn't have let him leave to drive, and he struck the back of Chris Stewart's very large car and absolutely wrecked it. Deanna and Chris died on impact, and Matt and Bailey somehow survived this accident. They were in terrible condition for in the coming days, and this event, Shawnee, rocked our community of Clifton Park, New York, and, you know, the Albany, Saratoga area. Deanna was beloved, Chris was beloved, and Matt and Bailey were like very well known local athletes and stars and whatnot. Bailey was on her way to go to Tennessee on a diving scholarship.
Wow.
And Matt was a 3-sport athlete and was such a good kid and such a nice kid. And I've never been a part of anything like this. There was this, Tim Tebow,
the
NFL player.
Yeah.
So Matt loved Tim Tebow. And just a couple of days after the accident, so Matt didn't know for a couple of days that Deanna had died.
Oh.
And so the day that he died, or the day that he found out that Deanna died, we as a community organized this thing. This is back in 2012, Twitter, when Twitter was a good place. We started this hashtag called Tebow Call Matt. Hashtag Tebow Call Matt. We wanted Tim Tebow to call Matt Hardy to lift his spirits after the accident and after finding out that his girlfriend of a year had died. And we actually made it happen. That we got this nationwide trending.
God, that's pretty
Tebow
crazy.
Tebow Call Matt across the country in a matter of like 4 or 5 hours. One of Tebow's right-hand men saw it on Twitter trending, told Tim, hey, call this kid. And Tim called Matt. He invited him out. He played for the New York Jets at the time. Invited him out to the sidelines of a Jets game and signed a bunch of stuff for him. And, you know, they're lifelong friends now. That was the single most incredible thing I've ever been a part of. And it inspired me. You know, I want to do something here to carry on Deanna's legacy. Deanna was the warmest person ever. You remember in high school, everything's very clicky. There's kind of like a caste system. There's like the popular kids and whatnot. Deanna was a popular kid, but not a popular kid who looked down upon the people who are not popular. She considered everyone her friend. She said hi to everyone in the hallway. She was equally loving and accepting of everyone.
My kind of human.
And she kind of taught me, because I wasn't that way. I was a popular kid who did look down upon the non-popular kids. And she kind of inspired me to just be nice to everyone, say hi to everyone. You never know what anyone's going through. Everyone has a story. And so I just wanted to carry on everything that she had taught me. And she loved softball. She was a star softball player. And so in the spirit of giving back and being kind that Deanna had, I started this organization called Deanna's Dugout, which is where we would collect, me and my friends, we hosted these local drives in various areas at baseball fields across upstate New York. We would go there, we would tell, you know, we would market, promote, I would go speak at various community events and say, hey, this is what we're doing. We're collecting gently used baseball, softball equipment, hats, gloves, belts, the clothes, the bats, all that stuff. And we would then collect it, sort it, clean it, sanitize it, whatever, and then donate it to this area that I had handpicked in northern New Jersey, which had just been hit by Hurricane Sandy. Very rare to have a hurricane in New Jersey.
Right.
So we packed up a massive truck with all this stuff that we collected, and then we shipped it down to northern New Jersey so that these kids could have their baseball season because they lost everything in this hurricane. And that was my way, along with all the tremendous helpers I had, of keeping Deanna's spirit alive. And unfortunately, I couldn't really keep it going because then I went off to college and I just couldn't organize everything. But you know, Deanna's still a massive part of my life today. I have a framed photo of her that her parents gave me. You said I've lived everywhere. Deanna's also has lived everywhere with me. Her photo is right by my bed everywhere I sleep. Every trip I go on, every new place I live in, no matter for how long or short the stay is, she's there with me. I have in my car, I have a little angel above my seat. And then whenever I go back to upstate New York where I'm from, I go to the cemetery and hang out with Deanna, and I set up a little baseball chair and just go out and catch up with one of my best friends.
It's really cute. I'm trying not to cry, but it's like, it's a really, you know, it's a serious story, and it's crazy because I feel like the way that you've embraced so many of these different aspects, I'm definitely going to cry, the way that you've embraced so many of these different aspects in your life, like I'm hearing you talk about, I mean, the first 40 minutes of this podcast, you were talking about so much that I felt like embraces a lot of what you're saying that Deanna had, you know, this sort of idea of like really having like a big picture and caring about the things that really matter.
Yeah.
Right. And like cherishing your happiness and your mental health, and also, you know, like not worrying about, let's say someone's more important than you or whatever, and you can't talk to them kind of a thing. Like that seems like that really came from her. And, you know, I always, there's this thing in Judaism where, I don't even know if it's from Judaism or if it's just from my dad, but we always talk about how this idea of like the best thing you can do for someone when they pass away is to really honor them and to just, you know, to embrace some of those things that you love about them, that you cherished about them, that they taught you, and to just like always live that, you know, and every single day that you're living that and you're embracing those things, you're honoring them. And so they're living on through you, and that what they taught you always continues. And I think that's really nice.
Yeah. And from that situation, as I was telling you earlier, I don't hold grudges. I know a lot of people who hold grudges. I, you know, you may say this is morbid, but I, I very consciously am aware this could be the last time I ever see you. This could be the last. I didn't know that Friday night, the night before, that was going to be the last time I ever saw Deanna.
Yeah.
I'm very aware that this could be the last time I ever see you. This could be the last time I ever talk to you. Let's not have it end on a bad note, because Deanna and I didn't end on the greatest note. And I now have to live with that forever, that yeah. We were so close and had so many memories and so many laughs and there was so much love between us, but it didn't end that way. And so, sure, people will screw me over and I won't X them out of my life, because I don't, relationships are everything in this world. That's what truly matters the most. And I don't want to have another situation where I regret how we ended things.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very hard lesson and a sad lesson to have to learn so young, but I can imagine that has really impacted the way that you've
absolutely
interacted with people throughout the rest of your life, literally.
Absolutely. Deanna tried to impact people, tried to, and again, people talk about making big sweeping changes, but I'm just like, just try to impact one person's day. Just try to do one small thing to impact a person's day. The number of people that I just send a text message to, have a great day. I texted my friend Kelsey before I got here. I hope you have a great Friday, and that you and your girls enjoy the birthday weekend this weekend. I love sending $5 to my friends. Go get yourself a latte this morning.
That's so cute.
Things like that. I just love, and Deanna did things like that as well. And she, you know, she inspired me to just be nice to everyone, be open to everyone. Don't be so judgmental of everyone. Yeah, there's so much that she taught me, and I'm so proud to have known her. And it sucks that it happened to such a kind soul like her. And everyone after the accident was saying, things happen for a reason. It sucks that she had to go to teach all of us these things. Because I tell you, Sean, everyone from my community
learned from it.
And yeah. We talk about it and think about it all the time. We all think about Deanna and Chris very often. And this is the 10-year anniversary, December 1st, 2022, after 2012. And it'll be emotional. And it sucks. It sucks losing someone, because with each passing year, it gets harder to remember what they sounded like. She had this unique way of saying my name. She called me Troy, and she would say it in this funny voice. And with each passing year, it just becomes a little bit harder to grasp on to those memories. And I don't believe in ghosts or supernatural or anything, but like in the ensuing years, I've had visions, I've had dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, she has spoken to me, she has shown up in my life. I remember my senior year of high school, the next year after she had died, I was being an asshole in gym class. I played basketball, and so we were doing basketball in gym. I'm the best one in the class by far, and I'm like shooting half court shots. I'm really good at half court shots. I miss three, but then I look at Deanna's poster, which hangs up in the rafters of the gym. I take one look at it, and I like blow it a kiss or something. Then I make my next shot, and I'm like, that was a sign. That was a sign that Deanna is looking after me and is supporting me. And things of that nature have happened through the years that remind me that she's here. And her mother, shout out to Debbie, sent me a message that I still have on the desktop of my computer. Deanna loved you. She believed that you could do anything that you put your mind to, which is true. She would tell her parents that all the time about me. And so everything I do, I do with her in mind. And one of my dreams in life, in my career, is to publish a book. And I can't wait to dedicate it to her. I can't wait on the dedication page to say, for Dee Dee.
Aww. I love that. I mean, first of all, you're a phenomenal writer, so I fully support that, and I think that would be great for you. And it's crazy how such dark things can lead to such positive influences, you know? Yeah. Like, this has obviously changed your life in a way that, I mean, is almost like incomparable, you know? A lesson that you learned so quickly and so harshly and so aggressively that just like instantly shifted you.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's remarkable. But how big is your town that you come from? Because it sounds like it's very small, right? And
it's close. It's not. So we had a massive high school, Shenandoah High School. So okay. I graduated in a class of 750.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. And we had, you know, about 3,000 kids in our high school. Our high school was so big that we had two high schools, where ninth grade just had its own building by itself.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So ninth grade That's had its crazy. Own building, and then 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. So my town's actually, it's not that small. upstate New York gets that stereotype about being
it does.
Hick it town, does. Farm town. It's not. Like, there's definitely that, but just not where I come from. So yeah, like, we had a big community. I mean, I only played one sport, because to play multiple sports, like, you had to really, really be a special athlete. Otherwise, you had to specialize, because it was just too competitive.
Interesting. Yeah. Was it, like, were the neighboring... who did you guys play? Also upstate New York people? Or was it, like...
Yeah, yeah. Shen, Shaker, Avril Parks, Saratoga, Colony, all
are these
boys.
The parts of known, or are these parts known?
No, those are parts known. The parts unknown that that Ariel and Chuck Mendenhall referred to was Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is where I called home for the last year.
Got it. Man, you lived in so many places.
I love new experiences. Again, driven by that idea of life could be taken from you at any moment. Go do as many things as you can. Have as many experiences. Don't wait for the right opportunity, the right time. It might never come. Just go do it.
Yeah.
And I'm so curious about the world. Like, I was in the Uber yesterday, and I was just peppering this woman with questions, who's my Uber driver.
Yes, I saw your Substack.
Yeah, for an hour.
Paula, yeah.
Shout out to Paula. Yeah. I mean, this immigrant from Colombia. I mean,
I love Colombia. Yeah, I
know nothing about emigration. I want to know everything about the process. So I just peppered her about questions, peppered her with questions about her life. And I just love learning about people. I've gotten really into psychology. I have a bunch of psychologist friends, and I went to therapy. And I'm just obsessed with learning about how the human mind works, because I spend a lot of time in my own mind. I like learning what goes on in other people's minds.
It is really fascinating. The craziest revelation that I ever had for me when it comes to, like, to understanding other people was the fact that not everyone thinks the way that I do, which is so weird, because you the way that you perceive everybody else and how you judge everybody else, and, like, let's say you have a conversation with someone, so your perception of that conversation, you're assuming that other person kind of had a similar perception, if you will. Like, the thing that always, this was, like, a really big turning point, was when I was actually in Colombia, sitting with one of my friends. We were at a restaurant, and we were talking about, she was saying how after she gets in a fight with someone, she always goes back home and then sits and thinks about, oh, maybe they were right, I was so wrong, da 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 da. And my mind was fucking blown, Troy. I couldn't even believe that was even, I was like, what? When I go home from a fight, I'm thinking of more arguments for the fight. I'm thinking of, oh, I should have said this, 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 and this. And, like, oh, I was so right. Hope they realize how right I was. Da 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 da. And, like, mind you, I don't always think I'm right, but that's generally, like, I usually feel confident in those kind of confrontational moments. And so to hear somebody talk about how they felt the exact opposite, like they, and I always assumed that everybody else who would go home after they had an argument with me would think the same thing, so they would, like, they would also think that they were right, and I'm like, I can't believe they think that they're right, you know, like, I can't believe that they don't see it this way, da da da. And it was just so eye-opening for me, and I was like, so crazy that people don't actually, like, it just shocked me to such an extreme, because it was something that I just thought everybody else felt that way.
Yeah.
And it really is crazy how people don't really, you know, we have similar experiences and we can resonate and relate to everybody, and that's definitely true. But at the same time, like, people genuinely feel differently about things. It's probably why I don't get so mad at people, because I'm a big believer that a lot of these kind of conflicts happen from misunderstandings. And that for the most part, the people I'm surrounding myself with are pretty awesome human beings, and they don't have malicious intent or anything like that. And so, you know, I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt, because I think to myself, well, maybe they just thought of this differently, or maybe they were just looking at it differently. You know, how could they have perceived this? What was their angle of this? Like, this was probably just a huge misunderstanding. And I really like to just work things out and, like, discuss them, because I just think it's so much easier if you can just lay things out on the table. And then usually at the end of that kind of a conversation, you're like, oh,
yeah,
now I get it, you know? So it's kind of like, I mean, it's a similar idea of, I also hate fighting with people. I hate grudges. I hate that idea. I think that's such a waste of time, again, because of this sort of, like, life is super fleeting, and you also never know what's going to happen to someone. And I think that communication, how people's minds work, like, that kind of stuff is so fascinating to me, because it's one of the main ways that you can improve your life that you have control over. Like, how you communicate with someone and with people around you. Let's say you're having a shitty situation at work, how you communicate with your boss. If you can be really good at communicating, good at listening, able to hear them, understand where they're coming from, and then be able to express yourself, you can come to a resolution in a much better way to improve your own existence so much faster, more efficiently than if you were bad at that and not able to understand that, you know? And it's something that I don't feel like a lot of people prioritize enough.
Yeah, honestly, I think that is something that can really separate you in today's world. Communication is a lost art. Good writing is a lost art. And it's funny, you think about that. These are like the most basics. We've been communicating forever. We've been writing forever. But there's so many different ways to communicate now that no one truly knows how to accurately communicate and how to do it well. And we're so passive aggressive. Young people are so passive aggressive. We bottle everything up. We don't like conflict. We avoid it. But like you said, and I appreciate people like you and people in my life who are just very straight up. If they have a problem, they'll say it. It's actually quite a breath of fresh air when people do that, because it's so awkward when you can feel conflict in the air, but you don't address it.
The tension.
Yeah. I mean, I really wish we would all just lay it out there. And whether that's in romantic relationships or friendships or people that you're living with, your roommate situation, whatever, just get it out there. Have an honest, open, truthful, respectful conversation about it, and then you can move past it.
Yeah. This is like the thing with, you remember that guy Shane who was supposed to take me to the fight? He still messages me, by the way. He's a nice guy, though. He's not like, the expectation that somebody should buy somebody a ticket that they don't even know, that they've never even met, is like kind of crazy. And when he was in the chat, he like made some comment or something like after it, and the girls wanted to rip into him. Mm. Like they were all in the girls' chat like, oh my God, he's saying da 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 da. And I was like, all right, everyone just like take a deep breath. Like no one's fighting on my behalf ever. No, please, none of that. Like we have no idea. Like this is like, I don't expect jack shit from some random stranger online. Like I'm not going to now make him feel shit and unwelcome and like all that. Like that's just such a weird, and also it could have just been a misunderstanding. Maybe he was nervous. He's on air with Ariel Helwani. That's a very stressful position to be in for a guy, like all of those things. And so I'm just a big believer of like, take a step back, to just relax. Like it's fine. We don't need to like make this a thing. You don't have to take everything so personally. Yeah. And a lot of times when someone's mean, it's coming from such an internal place.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a mean kid in high school. Do you feel like?
No, I don't think I was a mean kid. I mean, I wasn't a bully, but I was complicit in bullying. I watched it happen.
You were a bystander.
I was a bystander. Yeah, I was a big bystander. I would laugh along or I would know something's wrong but not say anything about it. You know, there was this girl in ninth grade who I had a thing with, but everyone made fun of. And then I kept the thing on the DL because I didn't want people to know. Now she's a very good friend of mine, and I've apologized to her for it, and she's just a beautiful soul and I love her to death. But yeah, I was a bystander of sorts back then. I would think that all of us are completely different than how we were in high school and college, but I am
I hope so.
I am so much more completely different. Like I am a new human being. I hate going back home because it puts you back in the mindset of who you were when you were 17 years old. Mm. And I am just completely different at 26. Not just from a maturity standpoint, we all are, but just how I view the world, how I think about the world. There's so much I did that when I was younger that I was like,
yeah,
really, bro? You thought that was cool?
No, I completely agree. I mean, I wasn't a bully in high school, but I was probably quite similar to Deanna. I was actually the JV volleyball manager as well.
Nice.
And I was student body president. I was friends with everybody, but I was also like popular-ish, I guess you could say. They would always like, whenever they would talk about the loud, mean girls in class, they would say three or four girls, because I was like, or four, because I was like a friend with all of them, but I wasn't really that mean. They'd always be like three or four, you know? And it was just hilarious when they would say shit like that. But but in middle school, I was a bitch. Like I was there was one girl that I was so mean to because I was, first of all, I was fat and insecure.
Middle school girls, the worst.
So no, but I was really, I like can't believe how horrible I feel like I want to hit me. Like, it was like, I can't believe I didn't get punched. Why no one punched me? Don't know. But I was mean. I was a bully and I was so insecure and it came from such a like weird place internally of not being able or not understanding that I could express myself and like that'd be totally fine.
Yeah.
I had a very hard time doing that, even though I knew deep down like I loved myself and that if I could be 100% me and like not lie and not do this and not do that, people would also be quite receptive to it. But I just couldn't get there. I was like, there was such a huge block. It was so intensive. And they, like, I don't know, two, three, maybe this was actually more like 4 years ago, I sent this girl an apology because I felt so bad. It weighed on me so heavily. Yeah. And I was like, Jess, you know I was the world's most horrible human being to you in middle school. And I just really want to say sorry. I'm a whole new human now.
I love that.
because it really weighed on me. Like, and you don't know what kind of an impact you have on someone. I mean, we're 12 and 13. That could have really fucked her up. You know, that was like, I was really mean. I would laugh. I would make fun. I was not a nice person. I was just not a nice person. Not to everyone. To some people, I just use a scapegoat. So it wasn't like I was like the devil to every person, but like there was definitely moments where, and it's so crazy to think of like me as that person.
Right.
When I look back now, because I'm just so not that human. Yeah. I mean, I'm so far from that. It's insane. I'm also not as fat. But it is just crazy how much we grow. Do you feel like your experiences, do you feel like what happened with Deanna was the instigator to what helped you change?
Absolutely.
And then do you feel like the ESPN and that kind of stuff was like catalyst to all of that as well?
Yes, I do think Deanna was a major turning point in my life in terms of just how I interact with other people. Two, my first year at ESPN, like I said, I was very sad and depressed and hated life. And it was kind of what inspired me to be in the industry I am now. And here's what I mean. This is why I love podcasting. Because when I was sad and depressed and had nothing to look forward to in that first year, when I was just ticking down the hours until I had to go in at 10 p.m., when I was so tired, the only source of happiness in my life was the podcast that I was listening to. Mm. It was, coincidentally, the Bill Simmons podcast. Mm. It was the Minimalist podcast. These voices that...
Ugh, we didn't even talk about minimalism yet. Damn.
Oh, we can get there. The voices that I would hear in my ears, and you know better than anyone, it's a very intimate, different relationship when someone is coming through your earbuds or your car speakers or your smart speaker. It's different. And so I felt very connected to these people. And also the Small Talk podcast is my favorite show ever. You feel like you know these people. You feel like they know you and that they care about you. And so I took that. This is the mindset I take into every single podcast I do. When I don't feel like doing a show, when I have to stay up super late, when I have to work on a pro wrestling show, which admittedly I don't like pro wrestling, what drives me is I remember sad me who was looking forward to the 8 a.m. release of the Bill Simmons podcast on Monday after a weekend of football back when I cared about football. Mm. Podcasts I work on now serve that same purpose for other people who are depressed or who hate their relationships, hate their jobs, hate something, hate themselves, like dark stuff. There's people who go through a lot of deep shit out there. And it's the shows that I work on that get them through their day, that give them hope, that give them an escape, that give them something to look forward to laugh about, to talk about with other people, to connect with. That I have never lost sight of depressed me in 2017, 18. And that is what drives me to this day. And that's, you know, for as long as I work in this industry, I'm always going to remember that and always going to be serving the people who just need something to be happy about.
Man, I love that. We spoke about that in the Telegram once about how Ariel has really like changed so many lives. Yeah. And I know he doesn't understand it per se because he's like talking about fighting, he's confused, whatever. But I mean, the truth is like my brother, he had a really hard time in the army. It was like really, really hard for him. He discharged early, a little bit early. And you know, it was just a big struggle. Like he was a combat soldier and it really took a toll on him. And his base was 8 hours away from my mom's house in Israel. So he would be on like 3 buses, a train, whatever, all the way to get to his base and then go back for every single weekend. Like it was crazy. And he said that the thing that got him through was the MMA hour, which is so nuts. But that is, and it was really comforting to him. And it was literally what got him through the army, which is so crazy that something can have that kind of an impact. But it's true. Content that can take you out of your existence and put you into a different space can be so liberating. It's, you know, I don't feel that way so much about podcasting anymore just because, like I was talking about this before the episode, when you're in the industry, I find it very hard to then go and listen to more podcasts after I've been working on them so long. But TV does it for me. Mm. There are TV shows that soothe my soul. Like most TV shows will do that. I don't even care if it's good or bad. I have a very low standard for television. I like quality and low quality alike. I love reality TV. I had a reality TV podcast for 3 years. Like I'm a big fan of that kind of shit. Survivor. I mean, when I like need a good cry, I'll watch Survivor and I'll just like bawl and laugh and feel like all sorts of emotions. And it takes you out. And it's the same sort of idea. And it can be really impactful in getting you to a place mentally where you can then go and do all the things that you need to do.
Exactly. I mean, it was those shows got me through a tough time. And then again, inspired the next phase of my career, and everything I do now is still based on that dark phase of my life. So I would encourage anyone to, if you're going through something, plug in a podcast.
Hell yeah. Plug in this one.
Yeah, plug in the Shawnee Show, plug in the Found Generation podcast, the Ringer MMA show to carry you through some tough times.
So do you still sing, Troy?
I sing in the shower. I don't sing quite at the levels that I used to, but I wait, please tell me you did not find that Pirate King
yes,
video.
I did.
Fuck, I told my parents to take that down.
I was about to announce to everybody that they should, in fact, go search Troy Farkas, God. The Pirate King.
Yeah, that was so terrible. And that wasn't like my part. That was an octave above what I actually sang at.
I fucking died watching that.
So I sang, at Shen, it's a big sports school, but also a big musical theater program. And so I was in a very select choir.
Oh, cool.
And I, sang as a soloist at, in front of NISMA, the New York something something Music Association soloist, where you perform in front of a group of judges and they grade you on all sorts of things on your singing and your sight reading and your form and all that stuff. And I loved that. And I've always had this very creative side to me, which is now morphed into my writing and podcasting and whatnot. I love performing. Everything that I've ever done in my life, I just love putting stuff out there for other people to judge, to praise, to criticize, to give me feedback on. That is what drives me. And I was a kid in high school, one of the rare kids who was a jock, but also hung with the theater nerds.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It was such a good escape or a good alternate thing for me to do. It was my favorite period of the day in school, was getting to sing with my friends and create, our choir was really good. And I actually dropped out of my college choir because it wasn't as good as my high school choir.
No way. Yeah.
And so creating these amazing sounds with these people that you form friendships with and cares about, it's the most unifying thing that I've ever been a part of. I fucking loved it. And I've been wanting to get back into singing. I've been wanting to take lessons.
You're
again.
Good. You're not. I mean, listen, the Pirate King video is hilarious, but you're still good. Like,
thank
you're
you.
Obviously a very talented singer.
Yeah, I mean, I know how to sing. I was like an opera singer, a musical theater singer. I know
alto. You did alto, or you did the other one?
Alto is a female.
Just kidding.
I was a baritone.
A baritone.
Yeah. So for men, there's bass, which is the low, and the tenor, which is the.
Hello.
And the baritone is kind of in the middle. For female, it would be a mezzo. It's alto is the low female. A mezzo is in the middle.
Okay.
Mezzo is middle in Italian. And then soprano is the high voice.
Oh, soprano is the high voice. Why did I think soprano was the low voice?
Don't know.
Because alto sounds like it would be high. Alto.
I suppose, yeah, because alto means tall.
Right.
Right. So that would make sense, but not singing.
Yeah, you should get back into singing. I think it's a really cool, like...
I want to. I do want to. When I was in New Hampshire, I had spoken with a voice teacher trying to arrange some lessons, but, like, the logistics of it didn't work out. But in my next move, like, if I go to... Because I'm probably going to a big city next where there's going to be many more opportunities to join community choirs or get lessons or whatever. I really want to get back into it. I miss singing. I miss performing like that in front of people. I mean, I performed at Carnegie Hall in New York City.
Nice.
Again, like solo in front of people and we're just in my high school auditorium. I sang at my high school basketball games. I would sing the national anthem at the game and then go play in the game.
Nice. Yeah. You were the anthem guy. Yeah. That's cool.
And I was Troy Bolton for
I know.
Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. I figured that as much.
Every year, Troy sang basketball and I was number 14. Go Wildcats.
I listened to that podcast you did with the girls from your high school, Julie.
Oh yeah, yeah,
not,
Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie. Sorry, not the one on your show. On their show.
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool. It was really fun. It's fun to hear people that have known each other for so long talking.
Yeah.
Because you have such a dynamic, obviously,
yeah, yeah.
And like it's cool to watch. All right, singing. Wait, what was I just about to say?
I can't believe you didn't ask for a sample, because everyone I talk to when I tell them it's a singer,
bad doing
it's
that to
like,
people,
oh,
you know?
can you sing for me?
But it's like I have a lot of comedian friends, and people always ask them to like tell jokes and shit, and I hate doing, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, you're not a trained monkey, but you can if you want. Sing for me, Troy.
I have a magician friend, and so whenever I'm with him, I'm...
Do do a trick.
Show me a trick.
Do a trick. Do a trick. Let me see a trick. Yeah, yeah. I wish I had a fashion designer friends. I could be like, make me some fucking clothes. Sew it up. Okay, so we have to wrap soon because we have to go to the escape room.
Oh, yeah.
Escape room opening. Me and Troy are about to go try and get out of somewhere, if you will.
Right.
But one question I was going to ask, because GC moved, this is just something I'm super curious about, because GC moved from ESPN to the MMA Hour. Did you have the option to go to the MMA Hour or the Ringer?
So... yeah, so as Ariel was putting together a staff, Ariel and the team at Vox was putting together a staff for when he knew he was returning to the MMA Hour, he had asked me if I had any interest in working on the MMA Hour, and this is before Connor had gotten involved, to be the audio guy. Like, there wasn't necessarily an opportunity available. If you said, you know, Ariel, he has a lot of power. It's his show, so he can make things happen. So he had asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. I said no because I didn't want to move to New York City, and because I was enjoying the remote work life. And also, I had worked on Ariel's version of the MMA Hour at ESPN before.
Right.
Now, it's what made me fall in love with the MMA. But me, I hate sitting still. To work on that show, you have to be in that cold studio for 4 or 5 hours locked in. And it's like, it's live the whole time. I'd worked on that. I didn't really like working on that at ESPN. I love the fighters. I love the interviews. But just being locked in that long was not something that I was super interested in. So he presented me with the opportunity to do it. I said no. And I knew he was also in talks with The Ringer. And when I left ESPN... I had said, because I was kind of burned by the corporate world, I was like, F the corporate world, I don't want to join that again. The only company I will join is Spotify, if they ever come calling. They're, you know, the leaders in audio. They're a great company to work for. I know people who've worked there that say great things about it. They're very forward-thinking and
making huge plays in podcasting.
Huge plays in podcasting. It's the place to be. They're only going up and up and up. I'll go there if they ever come calling. I knew Ariel was in talks with The Ringer, which is owned by Spotify. So I said... thanks, but no thanks. Please, you know, keep your recommendations for me for The Ringer. And that's what happened.
Because, yeah, I figured as much. He obviously loves you and wants you to produce stuff. So I was just like, it's so interesting that you didn't move there. But New York kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense that you wouldn't want to move to New York. Like, you don't seem like a...
Yeah, I love visiting New York.
Sure, but living there is a different story.
Living there, I mean, GC doesn't like it. The cost of living and all the other built-in cost to living there are crazy. I have so much more freedom and, you know, the ability to work remotely. Again, like, I've been working this week, Shawnee, but I'm in LA for 5-6 days just because I can do that. I can't do that if, you know, Connor can't go do that. So
yeah, absolutely.
I enjoy doing it. I'm also not a New York guy. I'm a minimalist and who prides himself, or, you know, I try very hard to not let the, you know, because I'm doing very well for myself, and I get a lot of really good opportunities, and I work with big name people, and, you know, I'm at this party last night, I'm going to this thing today, like, I interact with a bunch of people who have a lot of money and status, and people know them. I'm afraid of that happening to me, so I just avoid it. I just avoid.
You're afraid of the money and the status?
I'm afraid of...
Please don't be afraid of the money.
I'm afraid of giving in to desires and, like, wanting to just buy everything. I'm afraid
of... The gluttony.
I'm afraid of... Because I have a bit of an addictive personality. I'm afraid of losing myself in search of money and power and fame and status and sex and all of those things. So... rather than just go face those things, I'm just like, I'm just going to avoid it entirely. Get out of New York City. Don't live in Los Angeles.
I love that. I love that about you, because you're such a, like, we've always connected because you're just like a real freaking human being, you know? Like, you're just a good guy. You're solid as shit. And I'm so happy that you came on the show. I can't believe that you came into LA.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is great. I love, you know, I wish I could do Zoom episodes, but I hate them. So
this is better.
Yeah. I had a live show for years where all we did was on Zoom. And it was cool, but there's just
something... Was it before COVID?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I started my first podcast, I think it was 2017 or something like that.
And you did it on Zoom?
Yeah, so we did... Yeah, I was a big... It's funny, because I actually had a paid Zoom account. We streamed from Zoom webinar. That was my system. That was... I wish I bought stock in Zoom before.
Oh, gosh.
Because I was a big Zoom user. I was a huge consumer of them. I was obsessed. So I couldn't even believe it. And I was like... yeah, I should have done that. Was a bad business move, but yeah, there's just something about in person. So I love when people come to LA and I can actually have them on my show. It's just great.
Yeah, and I do miss that, and I am jealous. I have FOMO of Connor and New York Rick, my friends, just BSing with Ariel together in person. So, you know, like, I know I turned it down. I know it could have had that, but I also am pretty happy with how things are going. But I do miss the in-studio element because there is nothing better.
There really is. There really isn't. Whatever. Either way.
It's Friday.
All right, Troy, thank you so much for coming on. Guys, I want to, what are all the links and everything? So it's Found Generation.
The Found Generation podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. It's also on the Troy Farkas YouTube channel. But what I love the most is my Substack, which you can subscribe for free.
Hell yeah. Or you can pay.
Or you can be a paid subscriber like Shawnee. Shout out. TroyFarkas.substack.com. That's where I just do a lot of writing about, as you can tell, very obsessed with self-improvement, self-development, getting the most out of your life, especially as a young person in today's changing post-pandemic world. So I write a lot of stuff over there, that things that, you know, you can think about. It's also just, I write things for other people, but it's also kind of advice to myself as well.
I think it's great. Your writing is fantastic.
Thank you.
Your writing is truly great. I love it. And it's always like a really interesting, fascinating stuff that is really relevant to us. So yeah, highly recommend his Substack and check us all out on The Ringer Spotify live show. It's so much fun. We'll see you guys all there.
Thank you, Shawnee.
Let's go escape.